Why?
Because my arms are fat.
Oh.
This lighting is terrible.
Oh, it's god awful, but you know.
We're in a new closet. We're back
in our OG closet.
The little one.
I miss our closet day, Susan.
Did you notice my shirt?
Yeah, it was the one that we messed up. Well, it's not the one that we messed up. This is not the one we messed up.
I was going to take a picture in today and see if anybody wants it since I have
it. It's super spoopy.
I'm like, it's kind of cool because it's negative and my shirt's all crooked.
Just trying to show a little nipple.
Well, it's a 2X.
That's what you get when you pay for the highest price Patreon level.
I need it. You get nipples. No. You get arm fat. You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Oh, man. I need better. Promise we look pretty sometimes.
Maybe the next time. Yeah. We won't, but.
Well, I will. I honestly didn't realize we are going to go live every episode from now on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you're welcome.
Yeah. You get us. Just, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
How's your week been?
It's a long and short week ever.
Agreed. Oh, that was a creepy shadow. Longest short week ever. I didn't have. My week's been pretty standard. I didn't have Monday off.
Oh,
so
yeah. True.
I worked.
I mean, work is just work. I don't know. What else?
I don't know. I got nothing.
Oh, well, I went out since we last recorded.
Probably has the COVID. Probably bringing it into me right now.
No. Well, I mean, I might because I went to a bar. Yes, bars are open here. I don't know how.
A lot of them,
especially the bars that I went to, I'm really confused. Definitely no food was there. I hope not.
Mm-mm.
Pretty sure the bartender was drunk. My Jack and Dr. Pepper was terrible, so I drank a beer, which was fine. Billy Bob's was okay. They did limit the dance floor, which was kind of weird. You can only have 30 people total, so only 15 couples, and they were literally, like, counting the whole time until, like, halfway through the concert, and then, like, I think they gave up because people just started, like, going.
I hate that dance floor there.
Well, it's really awkward when it's empty.
It's just not big enough for anything, and there's always too many people, and...
Oh, see, there wasn't that many people this time. Like, it's not, like...
Yeah.
It's, like, it fit.
I just miss going to guitars and dancing.
Adequate amount of people. Oh, yeah.
I want to find a bar out by Tim's house so that we can go dancing.
Well, you went to the crappy karaoke.
It was awful.
Well.
And there was no dancing.
Oh, no dancing?
No.
Was there a dance floor?
No.
Oh.
It was, no.
I mean, you can make one. Could. Dancing.
I don't think Tim's that type of person. I would be that type of person. I don't think he is. A little bit more mellow than I am when we go out. I'm the wild one.
See, I need somebody who's, like, the wild one.
Me.
I just need to marry you.
Obviously.
Problem solved.
Really would probably solve a lot of our issues. In our dating lives, anyways.
Yeah. Yep, we could live together. We'd have the best house.
Mm-hmm. I did find some really awesome vodka. There is a vodka called, like, Wheatley's or Watley's or something, and it is possibly one of the best vodkas I've ever had, and it's $16.
Oh.
Yeah.
For, like, how much, though?
For, like, just a normal-sized bottle of vodka. Like, just...
Like, normal to me is, like, a liter.
No, not, like, a handle.
Okay.
Just, like, a regular, like, a twist-off top, like, that you can't carry around like a jug.
with a handle or no handle?
No handle. No handle.
So, like, a mini.
Sure.
A mini.
Like, a regular size.
I promise I'm not alcoholic.
Oh, God. All right. Well, let's do this. Who's going to go first?
You're going to go first.
Oh, goody, goody gumdrops. I'm going to have to try to read again from far away. Maybe if I, like,
zoom
make
in.
It bigger, like, raise my font from 16 to...
There you go.
Okay.
I can see that, and I'm blind.
Don't read my story.
I'm not.
Oh,
don't read my story on my paper.
Yours is huge font.
I don't know how to make it smaller.
That's massive.
I think it's because I print from my notes. I just haven't really, I don't really care. I lose my spot so much that it's kind of better that it's large.
I guess. Now, next time you just need like a little pen to like put a little dot wherever you leave off so you're
that
not always like,
smart. I bet there's one in one of those purses.
But, we're not moving it.
Okay.
All right. So I am doing missing persons.
I was going to say Amanda. You are Amanda.
I am Amanda. And I am doing a missing persons.
Immersion?
Immersion person. Kaish.
Oh, gosh. So the person that gets to watch us live also gets all the bloopers live.
Yep, they sure do because I can't edit it.
Yep. These will not be in our regular episode. Mm-mm.
You are so welcome.
And you get the raw, beautiful us.
Really, really. Mm. This it's our gift to you. Gift that keeps on giving. All right.
Don't screenshot this shit.
If I we'll see it you. Screenshotted anywhere, I am hunting you down. All right. So in 1989, Vanessa Bowden is what I'm going to go with, was 19 years old from what very little I could find on this case and on Vanessa. And by little, I mean three articles. She was a little bit rebellious, but still a good girl. She was in school to become a medical assistant. In an interview with Fox 8, her brother said, in quotes, "She was no saint, no angel, but she was a good person." I feel like that would be said about us when we were 19.
Probably.
We were a little bit wild and rebellious, but we were still good people, yeah. I think. I might have been a little bit more rebellious than you were.
Yeah, I'm like, I just drink underage.
And I was engaged at 19 to my 8th grade sweetheart.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. It's terrible.
I think Buck was deployed. So I was doing a lot of drinking and partying, mm-hmm. Jenny.
We were. Yep. Good times. So it was almost Christmas in New Orleans, but this Christmas would turn into a tragedy for the Bowden family. On Thursday, December 14th, Vanessa was hanging out on her cousin's porch across the street from her own home. Between 8 and 9 p.m. that night, two neighborhood boys, Charlie and Scott.
Scoot?
Scoot. Charlie and Scott stopped by and said that they would be giving Vanessa a call later. So this is kind of where I start to get some mixed information, because in one article it said that Charlie and Vanessa had a sexual relationship, even though Charlie had a girlfriend and a baby.
Oh.
And then in another statement by Vanessa's niece that she posted on Reddit, she stated that Charlie was a friend, but maybe a boyfriend, ? And that he was recently fired from his job because someone complained about him using drugs and he thought Vanessa was the one that made the call. In the Fox 8 article, it says that when Charlie and Scott approached the porch to talk to Vanessa, a fight erupted and, in quotes, one of the guys pushed or shoved Vanessa a little and the other guy stopped him. So regardless, none of these bits look really good for Charlie. So Charlie seems to be at the center of all the scenarios and it just doesn't look good for him. So I find more inconsistent information on her last sightings, but I remember last week when I did like that missing persons unsolved case that there was like all kinds of inconsistencies too. So maybe it's a thing. Yeah. In one article, it states that later that night, Vanessa's mother, Jeanette, woke up around 2 or 3 a.m. and saw that Vanessa was awake waiting by the phone. Jeanette went back to bed and never saw Vanessa again. That same article, it says that her great-grandmother, who also lived across the street, saw Vanessa getting into a white car around 5 a.m. In the Fox 8 article, her brother said that around 11:30 to 12, someone called and Vanessa jumped out of bed to get it, but he stopped her saying that it was too late to be on the phone and that she needed to go back to bed. He then goes on to say that between 5 to 5:30 a.m., he got up and saw her watching TV, and then that the grandmother who saw her get into a car said that it was between 5:30 and 6 now. And then at 6:30, her brother got up for work and noticed that the back door was already open. And they had, like, their laundry room was outside in a shed, like, detached from their house. So he said that he was going to the back door to get his laundry for work, and he noticed that the door was already open. So he thought that maybe Vanessa went outside to get his clothes for him from the laundry, but she wasn't out there. He went on to work and just assumed that she would be around. When her mom got up, she noticed that Vanessa wasn't in bed and that she also noticed the door was open, but no Vanessa.
Why did the brother not close the door?
That's also what I didn't understand. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
I feel like they're in on it. And they're just making up some story.
Yeah, I don't know. Something didn't seem, because then it, like, in one of those articles, it said that the mom was, like, the door was open as if she went outside and was planning to come back in because she didn't close it. Okay, but if the brother already saw the door open, like, unless it was a different door.
Who doesn't close the door?
Unless it was a different door, I don't know. At that point in all the articles, Jeanette called anyone that she could think of asking about Vanessa, but no one knew. And if they did know, they weren't saying. So Vanessa was reported missing on December 15th. There was no news about Vanessa and her whereabouts for about 3 weeks. And then finally, on January 2nd of 1990, someone found her body in an abandoned building about a block away from her home. She was severely beaten and she had cuts all over her body. She had been raped and burned. Her face, torso, and one of her legs were burned, and her throat was slit. According to one of the reports, she was barely recognizable, and they actually had to identify her using dental records.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Supposedly, the detective on the case interviewed all of the neighborhood kids, including Charlie and Scott, but Jeanette never heard much back. And I did read that they immigrated here or to New Orleans from Honduras. And the mom actually wondered if maybe because they were, I guess, immigrants, if that played a role in it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure. But she said that, like, once the interviews were done, like, she never heard anything back from anyone. Like, no news at all. So they actually did a rape kit on Vanessa. But I'm about to go off on a tangent here.
Oh, goody.
Oh, I got heated when I found this out. So they did the rape kit, but the New Orleans police purged the evidence room between 1999 and 2002. So when they purge things, they just kind of, from what I've read, just throw shit away. Just whatever. So they threw away Vanessa's rape kit along with evidence from over 55 other open investigations.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. The Denver Post did an article in 2007 over the purging of evidence in 10 different states, and honestly, it's absolutely appalling. They found that authorities destroyed biological evidence, so meaning rape kits, fingerprints, any type of DNA evidence, in nearly 6,000 rape and murder cases during the past decade, which makes them virtually unsolvable. Wow. Now, I understand that they can't possibly keep everything, but there has to be different ways to sort through the evidence better and only toss out what's needed or what's not needed. Like, evidence from solved cases or maybe cases over 60 to 70 years old.
Right.
Not, this would have been 9 years. 9 years. And they were just like, this looks like a good rape kit to throw away. Just, it's fine.
Yeah. No biggie.
So, I don't know. I don't think that evidence from unsolved cases should ever be tossed. If I need to be the one to go into these police departments and organize their shit, I will do it. I will be cheaper than those corporate companies that they hire, and I will probably do it better. And I would probably solve a couple cases, if I'm being honest.
Probably.
So, I don't understand. According to that same Denver article or Denver Post article, federal and state governments have given local police and courts free rein to handle criminal evidence because they are, in quotes, reluctant to cross over jurisdictional boundaries. It's fucking criminal evidence. Like, what? Joe Lotta, who is the head of the International Association of Property and Evidence, says, in quotes, "When I was in the FBI Academy 20 years ago, I looked in one of the best libraries in the world and there was nothing in there about evidence standards. Now I look around today and there are still almost no standards whatsoever." It is 2020. How are there no standards of evidence, especially with all the new, like, DNA technology and stuff? Like, how is there no standards on storing it?
That's crazy.
It seems, I don't understand. Anyways, great article. It is called Room for Error in Evidence Vaults, if you care to dive deeper, because it goes on and it is disgusting. So back to Vanessa's case. Detective Winston Harbin of the New Orleans Police Department has reopened the cold case and has sent away pieces of Vanessa's clothing for DNA analysis. He also confirmed to her mother, Jeanette, that Charlie's DNA was logged into CODIS because the family swears that whoever called her that night had something to do with it.
But they don't have any kind of phone records from
I guess that. Not, because no one answered the phone. Because her brother said that, like, it rang and she got up to get it and he was like, no. So if it rang again, they didn't. I don't know.
But didn't she answer a phone call in the morning? Mm-mm. She was waiting on a phone call?
Yeah, so that she was watching TV waiting on a phone call, but never that it came through or anything. Hmm. So...
Oh, yeah, they didn't have cell phones, so I don't think they would call and be like, hey, I'm outside.
Right. So Detective Harbin also believes that Vanessa's body was moved from where the murder actually took place to where she was found. Apparently, and where she was found was literally like a block away from her house. I will post like the map because like someone did a map with like the points on it and it's literally like right across the fucking street.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. But he believes that there were also multiple people involved, which if she was raped and burned and slit, I would probably imagine so.
Yeah.
The most recent information was in the 2019 article from Fox 8 that I have mentioned, and it's actually Vanessa's niece, Danielle, is the one who's pushing for justice, and she was just a baby when Vanessa went missing, like, less than a year old. Danielle says that she has always been into true crime and said that she noticed that the families in the shows that she watched and the podcast she listens to just never gave up, so she wants to get her aunt's story out there, and she really just wants justice. In her quote, she says, I want justice. Whoever did this needs to have consequences, not just enjoy life and go on because Vanessa didn't get to. I got goosebumps when I was reading her statement earlier. I was like, oh, my God. She never even knew her aunt. She's pushing so hard just for people to hear her story. And that's really touching. And I hope I did Vanessa justice with a story and at least brought more awareness to not only her case, but all the other unsolved cases.
That have no evidence left because it was just thrown away.
Right. If you are from or living in NOLA and have any information, you can stay anonymous and call Crime Stoppers. Their phone number is 504-822-1111. And you can also contact Detective Harbin at New Orleans because he is taking any and all tips related to Vanessa's case.
Awesome.
And that's all I got.
I'm trying to hear my kid. She was making some kind of noise.
She does that. It's just her noises.
That was a good story, but depressing.
Always depressing.
You and your depressing.
I know.
Unsolved cases.
I don't know why I'm such a sucker for these unsolved cases.
Okay. Well, I don't know what's happening to me because mine's unsolved too.
This I think like I can't wrap my head. I feel like I could do an entire season on missing people in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely insane.
Yep.
Like, how do these people just disappear? Like, Brian LaPisa's, that AJ Bro that I covered.
That was a good one.
How do they just vanish? They don't. When you die, does your body not have to be somewhere?
I guess not. It just kind of floats away.
Oh.
Duh, don't you know that?
You're a missing person, so you just dissolve.
Yes.
Like
glitter.
But I don't get it.
Yeah, mine's unsolved, too. I have a good idea of what I feel like happened, but...
I think Charlie did it in mine.
Yeah.
And I think the police did really shoddy police work back then.
I feel like the police still do there.
So, we're going to add New Orleans. Don't get murdered in New Orleans.
Yeah, that and on our list. Washington, right?
Washington and Waco. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Today's episode is presented by Veyer, and if you're anything like my dad, you're going to love what this company has to offer. Veyer was founded with the goal of building an affordable, everyday wristwatch that blends tasteful design with extreme durability and functionality. They are a true American watch company, and they specialize in both quartz and automatic watches. Veyer is offering our listeners 15% off if you use the code PODGO15. Just go to veyerwatches.com to learn more and get your new timepiece today.
Okay, so I'm hoping. I mean, I got a couple pages, but I don't know if mine's gonna be that long either. So we may just have like a shorter episode.
That's fine.
And
makes it easy today, for me to edit.
I'm covering Nanette Krentel. She was a retired preschool teacher who had been married to her husband Steve for 22 years.
Hashtag goals.
Yeah.
I want to be married.
I'm like, I feel like her husband killed her, and you're like, goals.
Oh. Not goals.
Spoiler alert. I think her husband did it.
I just want to be married for like years.
Aren't you already?
No.
You didn't tell our listeners that you and your boyfriend like made a pretend house.
Oh, we did. Whatnot. We went over blueprints of like how we want our little barn dominium to be, and I get to have a horse and one fainting goat.
Oh my God. Can I come yell at it?
Yes, I said I wanted one so I could scare it and watch it faint. And he was like, but goats are gross. I was like, I just want one.
No, if you have land, they'll be fine.
No, because he wants longhorns. And I have to have a horse.
Can you have all of them?
Maybe. That's a lot of work. I am not a rancher.
Come on now. You're going to be a stay-at-home mom. You'll be fine.
Okay.
Okay, I'll come live on land with you.
Okay.
I do require my own pool and barn home, too.
I hope you got a sugar daddy to build that for you, because I ain't got it, and neither does he. Sure.
He doesn't have a sugar daddy.
No. Okay,
we're getting sidetracked here.
As always.
Of course. Okay, anyway, so they were married for a long time.
Long time.
The end.
He killed her. Bye.
And it's over.
I promise this is coffee in our cups, not alcohol. It is 5 o'clock on a Thursday.
Well, I've got like a koozie. It's water. Is it 5 already?
It's 5:07.
So annoying. Where does the time go? Anyways, on July 14th, 2017, so this is not like a very old one. It's still open.
3 years ago.
Huh?
3 years.
Yes. Three.
I can do math.
Good job. So that was the morning of the fire. Steve says Nanette laid out his clothes and made him a peanut butter sandwich for his mid-morning snack, and they pretty much had the same conversation that they always did. So it sounds like their life was pretty routine, but I'm sorry. This was around like 7 a.m. Who has a peanut butter sandwich? And that's not even mid-morning.
That's
right?
My alarm clock so goes off.
That was the first thing that caught my attention.
So he said that...
He's bullshit.
A mid-morning...
This was his mid-morning snack after his wife laid his clothes out.
Okay, but maybe like it was a snack like for him to have later in the mid-morning. It wasn't for him to consume right then. She made it right then. But he was going to take it like to work. I need a mid-morning snack. I have one at 10 o'clock every day.
I don't even have a morning meal.
Oh, no, I eat every 3 hours. 7, 10, 1, 4-ish, and then when I get home. Remember, before bed.
So, anyways... I'm already judging him. He's a liar. He said around 7:40, he was headed to work. Nanette had walked him out to the truck with their Chihuahua Harley.
Ew.
So I'm assuming, I don't know, she's probably like this stay-at-home wife, getting his clothes out, making him food, walking him to his truck.
I would do that if I was a stay-at-home mom.
7:40 is the approximate time he said he's heading to work. He called his mother on the way to work, which he said he often did because she was widowed, so I'm assuming his dad recently had died. And then he called Nanette to let her know how his mom was doing. He said their call ended around 8:05 a.m. when he got to the station. At the time, Steve worked at the St. Tammany Fire Protection District number 12 as fire chief. How ironic that his house would burn down same day. Investigators say that Nanette left their house and she was seen on surveillance at the McDonald's drive-thru in town, and she would have returned home around 9 a.m. According to Crime Watch Daily, Steve's cousin called him around 2:30 p.m. telling him his house was on fire. A neighbor kid had been riding their bike and saw the smoke coming from the Crentel property, and the parents called the police. So I wrote shortly after authorities got there, Steve and his unit got there, but I also heard from another podcast that he was actually the first one on site.
That Steve was?
Yes. So him and his unit, well, his whole unit. So, yeah, no, that would have been bad. But the bad thing about it, so there was already police there, but they were the first fire unit there.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't equipped to put the fire out.
Why would a fire unit go to a fire... If you can't put a fire out.
Right. Was he just like, oh my God, my house is burning down. I can't get a hold of my wife.
You're fire chief.
Like,
why don't you have a fire engine?
No idea.
With water.
Like, did somebody just like forget to load up the correct equipment? Or did he just like want to rush? I really don't know.
Okay.
I was like, there's got to be like more on that, I would hope. But I'm going to continue, and that's. I don't know if that's the worst part, but it's all pretty shitty. Okay. So, we're not going to say shortly after authorities, because he was the first one, and then other people came, besides the two police that were already there. Nanette was found in the master bedroom suite, along with her body. They also found two guns, their family dog, and two cats, who reportedly had also been shot. So.
Was she shot?
We're getting there.
Oh.
During the investigation, it became apparent that the fire had been intentional. The living room and bedroom had been doused with an accelerant, so it was determined to be arson. The coroner who conducted the first autopsy determined Nanette had no soot in her lungs, and upon further investigation, noticed she had a gunshot wound to her front right temple. There was no exit.
As opposed to her back temple?
I guess so.
You don't have a back temple.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. A front row.
Her front right one.
But she doesn't have a back one.
I don't know. So that would be like right here? Or right here?
Your temples are right here.
Oh. I was like, here.
You have a left and a right.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
So.
Whatever.
Whatever. Okay. So.
Bitsy.
Shot in the temple. There was no exit wound, so they were able to find the small caliber bullet inside. Her death was ruled a homicide, but the St. Tammany Sheriff's Office believed it was a suicide since investigators found two guns around the body, and then they discontinued their investigation.
Oh, sure, because two guns equal a suicide.
Yeah.
What'd she do, shoot the two cats and then herself in her front right temple?
Yeah, because, you know, different guns to kill different people and animals. And
maybe she just could... Okay.
I'm going to shoot you guys with this one, then I'm going to kill myself with this one, then I'm going to burn down the house same time.
Right.
I think I even put that in here somewhere because I'm like, how did she do all that? But
okay.
So, they just continued the investigation pretty much like right
where
off the
was
bat.
This? I don't know where St. Tammany is.
You know what? In my written notes, I wrote down the city.
All right. But, I'll Google it. Keep on going.
I don't believe that it was far from New Orleans, actually.
Oh, great.
So you tell us, where is this place? So basically, they assume that she doused the house, went into her room, shot her animals, somehow started the fire, and shot herself, but didn't bleed out, but also died immediately because she didn't inhale any smoke because her lungs were clean. And I say she didn't bleed out because there also wasn't much blood around her body, so they didn't believe that she had even died where she was found.
Oh, so she shot herself in the temple and walked
and then,
to
like,
her bedroom.
Ran to her bedroom.
Right, and that must have been when she set the fire.
Yes. She's like, I'm going to throw flame in the kitchen or in the living room because I've already doused that. And I'm going to run to the bathroom as I shoot myself. Hopefully I'll make it there, catch that part of the house on fire.
So St. Tammany Parish is just across the Lake Pontchartrain from New Orleans. So New Orleans is south of Lake Pontchartrain.
Lacombe, that's where she was from.
Okay, Lacombe, Louisiana.
Yeah, so.
All right.
Anyway, so she did all that, apparently.
She was a busy bee.
But they say she didn't bleed out because there wasn't much blood around her body, which I don't know anything about. I don't even remember the name of the people that investigate fires. What are they called?
Fire investigators.
Sure. I don't know anything about that, but apparently they can tell, like, where blood is because it'll, like, burn. But there's
it does
any,
burn
like,
differently, I think.
But anyways, I also heard they believe she was dead before the fire because her skin did not bubble. Which was another thing. I'm like, how do you know that? But I guess the fire investigators
know that.
So
they found her, like, and she must have still had skin on her.
See, and that's what I was confused about.
Because I'm pretty sure you can burn a body and your skin disappears.
That's what I thought. Maybe her bone. I have no idea.
Okay.
That was only one article I read, but I did hear another podcast from these two girls that said that. So I was like, okay, well, maybe they read the same article. I don't know.
Okay.
But the house was, like, burned down. Not sure.
Okay.
But anyways, I don't know anything about what happens to you after you burn, and I hope to never know.
Me either. That you just turned ash.
Yes. So, they descended their investigation, basically botched the whole case from the beginning. According to the family, they didn't secure the scene and even left evidence for up to 5 days, like the guns, the animals, and a DVR with possible security footage from the property.
Mm.
5 days later...
That sounds like your Darlene Routier.
Darlie. Now I can't say it.
Routier. Sounds like her case. Remember when, like, the first responders, like, just trampled the whole crime scene?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that one's a little different because they were, like, trying to save somebody. This chick, like, their house was, like, burned. Also, I read that, so their property, they lived on 100 acres, and they had a single-story house, and it said they had a tin roof, so I'm kind of, like, picturing, like, a barn dough type of place, you know? I don't know. Anyway, where was I? So they didn't secure the property. They left guns on the property, the dead animals, the DVR, the footage. 5 days later, ballistics came back, and the guns that were found next to her did not match the bullet in her skull. So apparently she shot herself and then put two different guns. No.
Right.
So then the sheriff's department was like, oh shit. And they reopened the case because obviously now it's a homicide, not a suicide.
Sounds smart of them.
Which you would assume you shouldn't rule out homicide
right
that before quickly. You have that information. So that's just like a shitty job from the get-go. A little bit of info about Nanette and their property. Her and her husband owned 30 guns. They had 9 surveillance cameras around their home. Unfortunately, the DVR that recorded the surveillance was in the living room. And that was one of the two locations that were doused with the accelerant. So that in the bedroom. Investigators eventually found the DVR box. But it said that they were unable to retrieve any data because it was burned so badly. They said it seemed that the person who did this would have known where the box was located because it appeared to have been doused with the accelerant in the living room. So, she seemed... Oh, look. That seemed like a very paranoid poison.
Poison.
So, she does seem paranoid. And I imagine if I had, like, a DVR, like, recording my information, it'd be kind of, like, tucked away on a shelf or something. Mm-hmm. And then one of the podcasts I was listening to, they did say it was on a shelf. So, I don't know if the husband said that or... What? Because it was, like, burned down. It wasn't on the shelf anymore. But, I mean, me being paranoid, I would kind of, like, tuck it away. And they did say, you know, seemed like they knew where it was. Husband.
Naturally.
But he was on surveillance at work, so I think he hired
somebody. Yeah.
Okay, so Nanette seemed to be a very paranoid person. She often told friends and her family that she... only felt safe when she was at home with her security system and her guns, which I find ironic because her husband said the security system accidentally had been turned off the night before.
Mm-hmm.
So there wouldn't be much on the DVR if it had survived because...
accidentally turned off the night before a fire? Okay.
So that's weird. So let's talk suspects. My first suspect is the husband.
Always.
But he had a solid alibi. They had him on surveillance at work during the time of the crime. But just a little before 9... Wait, hold on one second. That shouldn't say that. I use talk text, so excuse me.
She does that.
But just before the murder, she had found out that he had had an affair. Steve said they worked it out.
Of course he did say that.
But according to the family, she was set on ending the marriage. This was just like
weeks. The husband would say that whenever his wife is dead. Yeah. But we worked it out.
Yeah, we were fine. So, no. And later, possibly in this recording I'm going to play, you know, they probably don't mention it, but he ended up having to resign. And there was another, like, a co-worker of his, whatever they're called when you're... fire sheriff or whatever, but he said that Steve had affairs with multiple women that he worked with, not just one.
Ew. What a winner. So, winner.
The one is what she knew about, but apparently they worked that out. Another possible suspect was her brother-in-law, Brian, so Steve's brother. Back in 2011, she had emailed her dad, and in the email stated that he said... let's see. It's hard because I'm quoting her, quoting him. But he had said, I will set your house on fire and kill you when you come out. She said, that is a serious threat to me. She said that to her dad. And that's what Brian said to her. Apparently, they were not on good terms because her and Steve would not give him an alibi for something he had done. Like, he had criminal charges. He had been in jail. But apparently, Brian made several threats to Steve and Nanette, and he had a lengthy criminal history. Steve had also said that Brian could be a potential suspect. Now he's either trying to get the attention off of him, or he was legit worried it could be his brother. But his brother was potentially cleared, and he also had an ankle monitor on, which you would think would give proof of where he was at the time. Mm-mm. But the ankle monitor... was not active.
So it depends on what the ankle monitor's for.
Well, it was supposed to be tracking him.
Oh, it was supposed
to be. Yeah, and they said it wasn't on.
See, I had a... Shocker. My friend's sister had an ankle monitor on, but it wasn't to track her. It was to... for her... she had a DUI. So it was, it would somehow, it was able to trace and like track if she consumed any alcohol.
Oh, weird.
But it didn't track her.
So his was supposed to be like tracking GPS and it wasn't. But it turns out he was at his parents' house. And, well, you know what? I heard that. But then he also, Steve said he called his mom. I'm not sure. But supposedly he was at his parents' and they had a camera showing that he was there. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not they could alter that, I don't know. But he was cleared. So.
Okay.
She had also told family and her friend Lori, and Lori's mentioned a few times that she, like, confided in her, but she was scared of Justin, who was her stepson. She told Lori that he owned several guns, and she and him were not on good terms. Justin was cleared, though, as he was out of state during the time of the crime, so. Nanette had also mentioned seeing a strange man on their property just days before her murder, which I'm thinking, husband, murder for hire. She had actually had a screenshot of him, I'm assuming from surveillance, but it wasn't clear enough, and that man has never been identified, which I want to try and find the photo because I know it's on the internet. So we'll post that for you guys. I would automatically assume the husband was involved in some sort of murder for hire, but this is actually still an open case. I also heard that her sister Wendy had a warrant out for her arrest because Steve filed a summons for trespassing.
This just seems like a very criminal family.
Yeah, they're very, like, something's going on in their family.
No wonder why Nanette was so paranoid.
Right. But it seems like she was close to her family because, like, she would email and talk to her dad all the time, and she was close with her sister, Wendy. Mm. And Wendy, so what she got in trouble for was she and a friend, I think it was her friend, they went onto the property where the house burned down. And they wanted to see the memorial where Nanette had died. And, like, there was a memorial set up, I guess. And Steve, like, chased them off the property, like, in their vehicles into Mississippi.
What?
Yeah. And then, so she contacted the police, I guess, to let them know, like, this just happened.
Right.
Like, but he had already contacted them and said that she was trespassing.
How weird.
So apparently he still lived on the property, or maybe he was just there. Well, I mean, if it's like
100 acres, then...
Yeah, so that's crazy. That's really all I put down. There's also a lot more drama. We're going to play a clip from another podcast because they read a letter from the sheriff at the time, and I'm not sure if he's still sheriff, but it gets a little political, too. So I think that's why the police did such a shitty job, but then they're trying to make up for it. But this is from the Murder Squad. Mm.
Love them.
Yeah, they are great. So here, I'll let you guys listen.
And then it gets political. And politics in Louisiana are like no other. Let's just point that out there right now. I'm disappointed that my political opponent has enlisted the aid of both of your media organizations to try and use the tragic death of Nanette Crentel for his own political gain as we get close to Election Day. The spread of misinformation and half-truths by my opponent with the apparent aid of certain members of the media is disgraceful, which is why I've decided to issue this statement to set the record straight. First and most importantly, since Ms. Crentel's death 2 years ago, my office has worked tirelessly to try and solve her murder and give her family peace. To date, we have unfortunately been unable to obtain sufficient evidence to obtain a warrant for anyone's arrest. Now, stopping here, that's interesting. That wording, saying... We have unfortunately been unable to obtain sufficient evidence to obtain a warrant for anyone's arrest.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, and taking a look at the state of the investigation, I don't doubt that that's the case. However, he's now just laying it out there. He's doing exactly what he's accusing his political opponent of doing. He is utilizing this case to his own political benefit.
Okay, so that's just one little clip. You can look her up, Nanette Crentel, and listen to their episode. They have a lot of discussion about it, which I do like as well.
They're just great all around.
Yeah, they do, like, I think that's like a 70-minute just...
They're a change of pace because they're men.
Yeah.
So it's a change of pace from all the female podcasters, which, don't get me wrong, love me a female podcaster. Yeah. Hello, yeah. I am one. But there is something different when, which is why I like Sword and Skill, which we did a promo for last week. I don't know if you heard it. I tend to do these promos and Aaron knows nothing about it.
I don't know.
Sword and Skill is another really good one. I don't know if they have Nanette, but they have over 170 episodes, and it's mm-hmm. very, it's one dude, and he uses 911 calls. He used, he somehow is able to get all of these 911 calls, like actual interrogation footage.
I cannot find them. How? Where do you get those things?
I heard in this latest episode, he has because they are a very top, they've been around since before Serial. They were, one of the first true crime podcasts.
That's cool.
And so they make a lot of money and they pay a lot of money. And he actually, in one episode I just listened to, said that they had a thing with Court TV, but Court TV was trying to charge them $500 per minute for something that is public record.
Oh my gosh.
So apparently Court TV is nasty. And he was like, we're not doing business with them anymore.
Yeah.
So that's really crazy. Yeah.
So back to Nanette, yeah, so the letter keeps going, but they kind of break down and keep talking about it. Definitely head over and listen to it. The letter's interesting. It's like he's defending the sheriff's department.
Really?
And when I first listened to it, I'm like, I think that's good that he sent out that letter. But then they're like, no, he's just trying to get one up and make it seem like, they're doing a great job. But the reason that he wrote the letter is this guy, last name Smith, I believe, ends up getting arrested. He worked for HUD, and his wife worked for the DA, which they go into detail about. I honestly think it's just a bunch of political conspiracy bullshit.
We hear that a lot they're of just those, like fighting cases that are like that,
and I don't feel like they're really worried about her case.
Well, I don't feel like a lot of them are either.
So it's really sad, but it's still open, and the number listed before, you can use that same number if you know any details. But
that Crime Stoppers for New Orleans,
it's so sad
for sure.
I really think I feel like they need to be doing more digging, like phone records, tracking people.
I think when it deals with, police sheriffs and chiefs, because they are elected officials, mm-hmm. it becomes political, which in policing and investigations, politics should be the last thing.
You would think, right?
That you care about. Who insane. Gives a shit how the case turns out? If they don't like it, chances are they had something to do with it.
Yeah.
Or they have something to gain by you failing, mm-hmm. and then that should just make you want to do it more and solve it. I don't know. I'm tired of these Louisiana cases.
So there's a Georgia one. We'll have to cover it. It's pretty popular.
Let me start with the Georgia. Oh.
Have you listened to that? Bless you, Brinley.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But the Lauren Agee case, you guys need to look that up. Yeah,
there's that whole Sheila Wysocki.
They need her on this case.
Oh, for sure.
She's a freaking badass.
I would love to be her.
I would just want to work with her.
Yeah.
I couldn't be her.
That'd be pretty badass.
But, yeah, she does a lot of digging. Like her.
For sure. Whale. Yeah.
We'll cover Lauren Agee. We just won't be able to go as in-depth as their whole season, because they do an entire season about it. And that's still open as well, because those little fuckers are still, I know, who killed her.
Same. But well, we got out another Patreon member. It's actually my old coworker, Morgan. So shout out to Morgan. She signed up on the OMG level. We appreciate the support. And like we said before, if you guys want to support us and help us keep doing what we're doing, then log on to our Patreon. There's a couple different levels, all kinds of benefits and rewards. We've been talking about these live videos, and that is one of the rewards for one of the upper levels.
We are live right now.
We are live right now.
It's looking beautiful.
It's great. One of these days I'm going to get tired of editing, and I'm just going to put our raw episodes on.
You can get a little raw with them. Give them a taste. What they could be watching us do.
Maybe. There's bloopers on there, all kinds of things. And then, as always, you can follow us, share our podcast, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes.
Share us.
All the shares.
Share.
We love it.
It'd be great.
Yes.
You don't even have to listen on Apple Podcasts to leave a review.
No, just go to our thing and push a 5 stars and be like, y'all are awesome. Mm-hmm.
I literally listen on Spotify, but, mm-hmm. Apple Podcasts is there too.
For sure. And that's supposedly, for whatever reason, the only way to help your podcasts grow.
I know. How weird.
So I do it for all my podcast buddies, the ones that I've made on doing this. I'm like, I'm going to leave you a review. Love you.
Love you.
Still got to get together with the crimes we're into. We're going to make it happen. That's all I got. Right. Like two.
My kid's watching something. I guess that's
sorry about that.
To go.
Yep.
Talk to y'all
She's
next
watching
week.
Dexter. We gotta go.
That's my kid.
Bye.